Eventually, they are able to put those notes together into something that vaguely resembles music. It just takes a while. If you want to learn to be an ice skater, you have to start by putting on skates and stepping onto the ice. If I were going to teach you to skate, and let's say you've ice skated a handful of times before in your life on public rinks, around in circles, I wouldn't have you doing triple axels on your first practice. I'd start by having you get comfortable moving around on the ice. Baby steps. We have to think of this as an exercise of building. You're building a house, building a city. Rome wasn't built in a day. Neither will your success be. A friend of mine had a hard time in accounting class remembering which way to enter the credits and debits when building a spreadsheet. So he came up with a small trick to help him remember. It went like this. Debit towards the window and credit towards the door. In other words, if he could imagine himself in the classroom where his accounting class took place, all he had to do was enter the debit toward the window and the credit toward the door. It's catchy, easy to remember, and at 50 years old, he still jokes about it. These are the tactics and small steps we celebrate in young children when they're learning to do something new. And yet we don't give ourselves permission to do the same thing. We underplay our small wins, downplay them, act like they aren't a big deal, when really these are the building blocks of the success we so crave. Without them, we have nothing. There is no such thing as a big win without 1,000 small victories that come before it. We're building a house. You can't do it with a single brick. You need thousands of them, each brick stacked on top of another. Building the muscles of maturity. I wish I could say that after winning nationals for the first time, everything changed for me. But nothing changes that quickly. Instead, shortly after that taste of winning, I went back to my losing ways. The next year, my first senior year at Nationals, I came in 9th, which was upsetting. That was not supposed to be how the story went, and yet it went that way. I didn't have what it took to hold on to the win. At the time, the whole thing felt confusing to me. Maybe you can relate. A door of opportunity opens, a new job, a promotion, a connection to someone in your industry, and you step into that opportunity for a moment, but days or weeks later, you blow it. You stay out late with friends instead of finishing your work. You sleep past your alarm and show up late. Few things in your life are more frustrating than realizing you have made it to the winner's circle, but you don't have what it takes to stay there. This is what happened to me the year after my junior level win at Nationals. I had what I like to call the trifecta of immaturity. First, I was being sponsored, which meant that for one of the first times in my life, I didn't have to worry about money. Second, I turned 18. And third, I got my own apartment. So I went from having relatively no freedom and no responsibility to having tons of freedom and tons of responsibility. And like so many young people today, I didn't have the character to sustain any of it. I was free to do whatever I wanted, and I did. I was mostly committed, but not completely. I showed up for practice most of the time, but not all of the time. Part of me felt like since I was now a winner, I didn't have to work quite as hard. The title should just be handed to me. It's amazing how easy it is to get here when we treat our wins as destinations rather than just as small stops on the journey. Titles aren't passed down through generations. Winning is never guaranteed. It's given to those who fight the hardest, who decide not to give up, and who know that finishing first has more to do with commitment and dedication than it does with an overinflated ego. A winning life, a winning attitude, is built over a very long period of time. For a long time, I beat myself up for how I acted in those early days. Now, looking back, I realize it was just a matter of immaturity, evidence that I had more work to do. I needed more consistency and repetition. Even though I grabbed that one small win, I didn't have the strength and stamina to hold on to it. I'll address this more in the later chapters of this book, but it's like any muscle you build. There's going to be pain attached to it, not to mention it takes a long time to build character and accountability. It doesn't happen at ludicrous speed. A muscle comes in many shapes and sizes. As you fight your way to become a champion, you'll need to build your mental muscles, your spiritual muscles, your emotional muscles, and your physical muscles. Every challenge that comes your way is another opportunity to build these muscles. Honestly, I shouldn't have made it out of sectionals that year, but by some miracle I did. And I started to notice that winning wasn't something that happens to you, but something you build, something you fight for, a way of living that dictates everything about how you do your life. Stress breeds strength. There's a slim chance you might be able to make a bit of success happen overnight, either because of talent or just luck. But luck is not a firm foundation. I can list a dozen truly talented people who, despite their talent, still had to put in decades of work before they were able to build a strong foundation of success. It's time to check your entitlement at the door. Real winners aren't built overnight. First place is a title that must be hard fought and hard won. Stress not only helps us get to the winner's circle, but it also gives us the strength to stay there. In fact, a group of scientists undertook a study about Earth's living systems using a biosphere, which allowed them to witness the growing patterns of trees. One of the most profound things they discovered had to do with the wind's role in a tree's life. Pay attention to what happened when trees grew up in the biosphere, sheltered from the pain of the natural elements. The trees inside Biosphere 2 grew rapidly, more rapidly than they did outside the dome. But they also fell over before reaching maturity. After looking at the root systems and outer layers of bark, the scientists came to realize that the lack of wind in Biosphere 2 caused a deficiency of stress wood. Stress wood helps a tree position itself for optimal sun absorption and also helps trees grow more solidly. Without stress wood, a tree can grow quickly, but it cannot support itself fully. It cannot withstand normal wear and tear and survive. In other words, the tree needed some stress in order to thrive in the long run. Isn't that fascinating? So what are we doing for kids when we shield them from pain, loss, or failure? We think we're protecting them, but what if we are actually weakening them and stunting their growth? So what if you won your fourth grade spelling bee? Or if you were voted most valuable player on your high school soccer team? What are you doing to build yourself into a winner right now? The greatest indicator of success is longevity. And longevity is only achieved by taking small, meaningful, consistent steps in the same direction. If you have yet to see the kind of achievements you're looking for in your life, ask yourself if you have put in the time. Get really honest with yourself about this. You can't expect the instant gratification of social media. You may never be liked or starred or applauded for the work you put in this morning. But one day when you stand in front of your peers and heroes holding that trophy, no one will be able to deny that you've done it. You can't fake the work. You will know, and so will everyone else, that you deserve to be standing there. You are a champion. Success leads to success. One of the great things about success is that each little success leads to the next success, and the next one, and the next one. It's like building blocks. You need dozens to build something meaningful. One door opens another door, which opens another. Take Richard Branson, for example. Branson's first business venture was a simple magazine called Student, which he founded at age 16. He later set up a mail-order record business, which led to a chain of record stores a few years after that. You may have heard of Virgin Records. The Virgin brand eventually grew to include an airline, a music label, and even a healthcare company. Do you think Branson knew as a young high school student starting Student Magazine that he would eventually be knighted? I doubt it. Do you think he ever imagined he would have an airline, a record label, a healthcare company? Do you think he could have predicted that he would be listed as one of Great Britain's greatest Britons, according to a 2002 BBC poll? I doubt it. He just reached for what was in front of him. That success led to another success, which led to another success, which led to another. Michael Bloomberg is another man who took this strategy of using one success to build towards something. You might know Bloomberg as the 108th mayor of New York, but you might not realize how he got there. Bloomberg went to Johns Hopkins University, where he graduated with honors, and then went to Harvard Business School. In 1973, he became a partner in the securities brokerage Salomon Brothers, where he headed investment banking and then systems development. But in 1981, Salomon Brothers was bought by Phibro, and Bloomberg was laid off without any severance. Using the equity money from being a partner in the firm, Bloomberg set up a company named Innovative Market Systems, and Merrill Lynch became its first customer in 1982. Lots of hard work and slow growth later, the company has over 325,000 terminal subscribers worldwide. Bloomberg is now worth $47.5 billion and is one of the top 10 richest men in the United States. When you break this down, you realize that most of the people who have been really successful didn't come with platinum spoons in their mouths. Success comes from simply reaching for the next thing, trusting one little success will lead to another one, and to another. The long road. You do not have to be the greatest to finish first. You only have to be the best you've ever been. You have to be better than you were yesterday. So often when we look at success, we see the incredible virtuoso musicians or athletes. What we don't see is the long road they walked to get there. We don't see the time they put in while we weren't watching. We see Michael Jordan in a Nike commercial, but we don't see the more than 9,000 shots he missed to get to the game-winning shot we all remember. To run a marathon, you'll have to take 55,334 steps before you get to the finish line. Not to mention all the steps you take in the training process before the actual race. You didn't see me show up for 31,200 practices just as an amateur before I even turned pro. Of those practice sessions, one-third were free skating sessions where I would fall an average of 4 times per session. That means I fell 41,600 times, and then I got back up and kept skating. Winning starts at the starting line, not the finish line. We get so focused on the finish line that we forget everything that comes before it. We can get so caught up with our failures that we don't even give ourselves permission to keep putting one foot in front of the other. There are 1,000 finish lines along the way, not just one. Each day is a finish line. Each practice is a finish line. Each little decision is a finish line. I dare you to take that first step toward your own version of success. I can't guarantee what will happen next, but I can promise you won't regret it. This is where grace lives, in the jumping in showing up day after day, in trying and learning and trying again and again. Chapter 5. Keep showing up. For me, winning isn't something that happens suddenly on the field when the whistle blows and the crowds roar. Winning is something that builds physically and mentally every day that you train and every night that you dream. Emmett Smith. It's tempting at times to look around and think that everyone is getting where they're going faster than you are, that they're finding more success than you, and that you must be doing something wrong. What if it's just taking longer for you to get to the finish line than you first expected? What if winning was so much less about having the right qualities and qualifications and more about simply having the hunger to win? What if it was less about hard work and sacrifice and more about commitment and repetition? Would the concept of winning become easier for you if you believed it was simply about getting on the right path and doing the same things over and over again? Will you stay the course? On the path of success, things don't always go exactly as you plan. It doesn't happen at ludicrous speed. But when we put our lives in God's hands, when we give ourselves to His purpose, He promises to make it all matter for something. In 1976, I decided I wanted to get ahead of my competition by doing a jump no one was doing at the time, the triple lutz. In practice, I fell on my right hip so many times attempting the jump that I developed a cyst on my right side. The swelling went from just above the outside of my right knee to all the way above my hip. Eventually, I was forced to have surgery, which was not only painful, but also set me back months in my training. Not to mention it set me up for a devastating loss in 1977, a year when I was expected and expecting to win. I had put everything on that one jump. It became an idol. The problem was, when I began to see the jump slipping from my grasp, as well as my expectations for 1977, I lost motivation and went back to my old ways of underperforming. I was partying with my friends and having fun rather than taking my training seriously. Not surprisingly, I lost that year at Nationals. It was my fault. I knew it was. Then, after that loss, things got even worse than I expected they could. Tragedy struck in my life. In May 1977, I lost my mom to cancer, and losing her changed everything for me. Pain is motivating. Loss is motivating. The life you don't want becomes a firm foundation for the life you do want. In 1978, I finally mastered the triple Lutz, mostly because even after the surgery on my injured hip, it hurt too much to fall. I showed up that year ready for battle. I took my mom with me to every practice in spirit. She held me accountable. And when I showed up to competition in 1978, I became the first person in the world to land a triple Lutz in the short program. At sectionals that year, the top three men in the country were forced to compete instead of going straight to the national championships. I was the first one to skate the short program. My sponsor, Frank McLaren, told me two things. One, the first shall be last and the last shall be first. I didn't understand that at all at the time. And two, to take what the ice gave me. I relaxed going into that first triple Lutz and won the short program over the top three guys in the country. I went from ninth place in the United States in 1977 to third place in the United States in 1978 and achieved 11th place at the World Championships that same year. The circumstances you face in your life and in your work that are not ideal become the very reason you decide to be a champion. This is how it was for me. Even in the face of overwhelming loss, I kept showing up, doing the work, being the kind of man I knew I wanted to be. The rest took care of itself. The roller coaster. In 1979, right after the World Championships, my coach decided to take on my biggest competitor, one of the guys I would need to beat to make it to the World Championships the next year and the Olympic team in 1980. That meant that now I would be skating with him on the same ice every day at practice, which meant practice wouldn't be practice anymore. It would be competition every day. I started to do what anybody would do if they were competing against their biggest competitor every day. I began overworking myself, practicing too hard, pushing myself too far. It was a setup for an injury. When attempting to do a jump my competitor had done that I hadn't, I landed forward, still rotating, and tore every single ligament in my right ankle, which put me behind physically and politically. Again, notice how many ups and downs can occur when you are on your path to finishing first. People often complain to me that they must not be made to win because they keep experiencing so many setbacks. Constant setbacks are part of the process, an expected part, a necessary part. Of course, with the injury, that season didn't go as planned. And after a disappointing fourth place at Nationals, my coach lost interest in me. I could feel it happening even if he wouldn't say it. Things were about to get worse for me before they could get better. Repeat, repeat, repeat. After my fourth place finish at the 79 Nationals, I knew I needed to speak with my coach. I was grateful that he saved my skating life and showed initial interest, but things had changed. I told him that my sponsors had informed me they would support me if I left to take lessons from Mr. Laws in Philadelphia. I asked my coach straight out if he was still interested in teaching me. What came next let me know exactly where he stood in our coach-student relationship. He said that Mr. Laws was his friend, and if I wanted to take lessons from him, he wouldn't be upset or try to hurt me politically. What he never said was stay. I was obviously expendable. The rejection was equally painful as it was liberating. This was disturbing for me, yet I couldn't blame him. I felt as though I had let him down. I wondered how I was ever going to be great at anything given the fact that this was the best opportunity I'd ever been given, and I'd blown it again. There are moments in life when you arrive at crossroads. Either you can keep doing the same thing you've been doing and get the same results, or you can make a change and watch your life change. Once again, I decided I was going to do the second. Notice how many times I had to make the decision over and over again, how many times I had to fall and get up again. This is a key element in finishing first. Each time you make a choice to win, the decision sinks deeper. I found another coach, a man who didn't have the pedigree of a world championship coach necessarily, but he was the president of the International Professional Skaters Union and was also a friend and willing to help. Once again, I made a decision right then and there that I was done underachieving. I was ready for a change. I was ready to accept this new opportunity. I was done being the person who would go only halfway or commit to something but not follow through. I was going to continue to honor every sacrifice my mom had made for me, everything she had invested in me. Once again, I was going to prove her right. She was the one who had spent her whole life loving me so I would be the best I could be. Don Laws was my new coach, and most of what he taught me didn't have to do with skating, but with what it took to be a winner. I desperately needed that from him. As before, I needed someone to be hard on me, to give me some structure, and to expect more from me than anyone had ever expected. He taught me how to be on time, to take myself seriously, to use every minute on the ice because ice time is gold. Actually, he would say it's beyond gold. It's platinum. Don't waste it, he would urge me. He was the one who taught me that to be the best skater I wanted to be, I had to be the person I wanted to be. He saw something in me I couldn't see in myself, the same way my mom had. And this, as it turns out, was exactly what I needed. But I had to agree, again and again, day in and day out, I had to make the same decisions and keep showing up. That year, at my first international competition of the year, my expectations for myself were pretty conservative. I thought, if I came in fifth, that would be good. But when it came time to skate, I surprised myself. I'd never done a clean program like that before. I actually beat the guy who ended up winning the silver medal that year at the Olympics. I won. For me, that was all it took, a taste. Now I could see my path. So I started focusing on what I needed to do to get over the next obstacle in front of me. I started to become a champion. Protect your goal. What does showing up and doing the work look like for you today? Would it mean making that call you've been putting off? Sending those emails you've been avoiding? Going to the gym for the first time in a week? When someone wants to go to a movie at 10 p.m., but you have practice at 6 the next morning, what is your response? Are you going to squeeze it in, losing sleep to make it all work? Or are you committed to being fully present at practice the next day? You can have whatever you want, but you can't have everything. You have to make a choice about what's important to you. Let me tell you what sets a true champion apart from a wannabe. What happens when it's time to show up to do the work? Are you there in mind, body, and spirit, or are you somewhere else? When your friends call to see if you want to take a long lunch on a work day, what choice do you make? If you're satisfied with how things are, you'll say yes. You'll rearrange your work time so you can fit them in. If you're a champion, the answer is, I'm busy. It's not that you can have no friends or no life, it's just, I'm busy during work time. Work time is work time. Once I got into the rhythm of being accountable to something bigger than myself, showing up for practice wasn't a question. It wasn't just showing up most of the time anymore. I was showing up all of the time. And I wasn't just showing up mostly. I was showing up completely, mind, body, and spirit. I started getting more out of my practice time and began to see my progress double and triple. I was getting better, faster. Any of us can make excuses about why we can't or aren't showing up in a real way to our priorities. But at the end of the day, there is no denying who was there and who wasn't. You can't fake this. You either did the work or you didn't. You were either present or you weren't. And when it comes time to compete, it's clear who has put in the time and who has half-heartedly hoped that their meager efforts will be rewarded with an undeserved victory. Mike D is an old friend who I used to hang out with while I lived in Philadelphia training for the 1980 Olympics. He was a former skater who was going to college for business. When I would ask him to go to a movie with me, he would say, "I can't. I'm studying for a competition." Meaning, he had a test coming up. He had a work ethic that remains to this day. He was willing to sacrifice and put in the time. Today, he is one of the most successful people I know in business. And he climbs mountains and rides bikes and is a top performer in everything he does. He's an inspiration to me and so many others. I heard of a young man who moved to Nashville because he needed a big change in his life. He's recovering from an addiction to prescription drugs and wants to be a musician. Nashville, of course, is the most competitive market for musicians, but he moved there anyway, trusting with commitment and repetition he could make progress towards his goal. He's a drummer, but took a job at a bank during the day to pay his bills. He found a cheap place to live and rented a storage unit where he keeps his drum set. 5 days a week after work, he leaves his job and drives to the storage unit where he practices the drums for 3 hours at a time. Coworkers ask him to hang out after work, and he says no. He is scheduled to go practice the drums. Friends ask him to dinner, and he says, "Sure, on the weekends. During the week, I work and I play the drums." There is no confusion about priorities, no question about what is going to happen each week, no question in this young man's mind what his priorities are. That is commitment and repetition. And as a result, I guarantee you that he will make a way for himself, even in Nashville's incredibly competitive music industry. You might be thinking, "Okay, I want to be a winner, but I also want to have a life." My question for you is this. Do you want the same life you've been living, or do you want a different one? The fact that you're this far into the book tells me that you want a different one. You're not satisfied. You're ready for a change. That's what we're talking about here. We're talking about making a change, small changes really, so that you can have the life you've always wanted. You might also be wondering, what about my friends? Let me be blunt with you for a minute. If your friends are constantly trying to pull you off your path, there's a very good chance that those friends are losers and want you to be too. The life of a champion is not a life without friendship, but is a life that requires you to decide who your friends are going to be. You're not going to choose people who distract you from finishing first with pointless pursuits, such as bar hopping and hanging out until all hours of the night. No true champion has the time or energy for that. You're too busy, too focused. I've read countless accounts of people who have arrived on the shores of this country, not able to speak one word of English, who have become magnificent entrepreneurs. So much of it, I think, is that they know that if they don't, they're not going to eat. Necessity is an incredible motivator. Too many of us lack drive not because we don't have what it takes, but because we're too comfortable. We think, "I'm not going to get anything more for working hard, so what's the point?" The point is that you've got one life to live. This is not a dress rehearsal. It's your only shot. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And your job is to make the middle as great as possible. There are no rainmakers. Sometimes I come across people who think that because a person has experienced success, he or she is some sort of rainmaker. They think the person has the Midas touch and that everything this individual puts his or her hands on turns to gold. Or they attribute the person's success, at least partially, to luck. How lucky that person was, we tell ourselves, to be in the right place at the right time, or have shaken hands with that right person, or to have gained momentum or attention for what they are working on. This translates at times to people wanting to jump on whatever bandwagon they think will advance their cause. They want to ride coattails to victory. Many of these people even have pure motives and generous goals. They're raising money for cancer research, for example, or wanting to get a positive message out to the world. But I have to break the disappointing news to you that there is nothing magic about success. It won't do you any good to hitch your wagon to someone else's star. There is only one explanation for a meaningful body of work: commitment to the process. The successful people put in the time. They're willing to do the work. Luck is fine, but luck is not a strategy. To be in the right place at the right time, you have to be in the right place all the time, over and over again. Each day is a collection of minutes. Each year is a collection of days. These are the bricks in the wall you're building. What are your bricks made of? No matter what you're trying to do, you're not going to be able to see results overnight. The question is, are you willing to do the things other people aren't willing to do? Are you willing to put in the time? Are you willing to do the work? The reason I've raised so much money for cancer is because I've spent 16 years banging on doors, asking the hard questions, asking the favors, hitting the streets. People think the success is magic. It's not magic. It's simply a commitment to the process. During my first years of being a professional skater, one year I was on the road for 12 months. The next year I was on the road for 11 months, which means that between those 2 years, I had 1 month off the road. I kept showing up, working hard, doing what I knew it took to be successful. So little of that was big and flashy. I just knew I had a job to do, and I did it. The bad news about this is that there is no magic pill or concept that offers you a surefire breakthrough. The good news is you don't need any of those things. You may have heard the quote from Thomas Edison that says, "Opportunity is missed by most people because it is dressed in overalls and looks like work." Success is not rocket science. Anyone can do it. Anyone, that is, who is willing to do the work. While crowd-watching on my family's trip to Disney World, I caught myself thinking about how that amazing park wouldn't have been there without the strong and faithful vision of Walt Disney. It all started with one man. He just drew a cartoon. He worked hard, put in the time, kept showing up again and again. And look what he has to show for it today. His legacy lasts even beyond him. His joy is spreading in a contagious way even after he's left this world. When you decide to become a winner, you forfeit your right to complain. Do it for the love of the game or the art or the business, or don't do it at all. You can keep losing if you want to. You can have your 10 minutes in the spotlight. I know that so many of you listening to this, like me, want more. You don't want to have a short shelf life. You want longevity. You want to truly make a difference. Once I started working with Don Laws, I started to work like a champion. I felt a tremendous amount of guilt for having been such a lousy competitor while my mom was still alive. And I began to see how all my self-sabotaging, lazy, and entitled ways weren't just sad, but they were actually wrong. Suddenly, I felt myself growing up physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Almost overnight, I developed a maturity, like a boy turning into a man. People often say things to me like, "I don't have the discipline to be a champion," "I'm a procrastinator," or "I'm just lazy." My response to them is the same. You're not lazy. You just haven't shown up yet. You haven't tapped into that innate human drive for survival, that superhuman desire to see results. What would help you to access that part of yourself? For some of us, that comes through tragedy. Losing my mom motivated me to action in a way nothing could before. For some, it's a life-threatening diagnosis that breaks them free from the mentality that they can't succeed. Others just wake up one day and decide they're tired of underselling themselves, tired of underperforming, tired of acting like they don't have what it takes. When we go from being terrified of failure to being terrified of never trying, we take the first steps to changing our lives forever. Put in the time. One of my biggest pet peeves when I did television commentary was when I heard coaches give their skaters instructions right before they headed onto the ice to compete. I often stood back and watched this happen and thought to myself, "It's too late! You're too late!" You can see it in the skater's eyes. The information is going in one ear and out the other. Or even worse, it is scaring the skater into doing exactly what the coach is advising against. The coach is saying, when you get to that jump, make sure you breathe and don't drop your left shoulder. I can tell you exactly what's going to happen when the skater gets to that jump. He or she is going to drop the left shoulder. By the time you've made it to the competition, it's too late to be making changes. You need time for the practice hours you've put in, the corrections, and the messages from your coaches to become a part of who you are, not just what you do. You need time for all of it to sink in at a cellular level. There is no faking the process, no such thing as a shortcut. Any instruction from a coach or anybody else coming to you at the last minute is coming to you too late. If you have to think too hard about it, you've already lost. I play golf with a friend in town, and sometimes he gets very critical of his golf game. When we were playing one day, he hit a drive that pulled to the left, and he let out the most frustrating sigh. "I can't believe I missed that shot," he said. But I just looked at him. "How many balls have we hit today?" I asked him. He looked a little confused, but turned to me. "Probably 20 or 30. "Yeah, if we hit 100 balls today and 100 balls every day, then you could be mad at yourself for missing that shot. Otherwise, you're not allowed to be critical about this. The pros expect to hit a shot like that because they're hitting 400 to 500 balls per day. We're hitting 20 to 30. You can't expect to be better than the time you put in. The point is, if you don't put in the time it takes to be a champion, you can't be surprised when your performance doesn't reach champion heights. It takes tons of time and tons of practice, and there is no shortcutting or short-circuiting the process. If you want to be really good at something, you have to be consistent. To practice your golf shot 100 times is helpful. To practice it 1,000 times is game-changing. If real estate is about location, 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 then victory is about repetition, repetition, repetition. When I decided to become a professional skater, it took me 2 years of endless experimentation to get to the place where I was no longer an amateur. That's how long it took for all the training to become a part of me, to get into my DNA. You can't fake it. There are no shortcuts. You either put in the time or you haven't. There's a great metaphor by the author Simon Sinek, who became famous for his TED Talk, Start With Why, and his book with the same title. He talks about how the millennial generation has a way of seeing the summit of a mountain, but not the mountain itself. This is the disease that keeps us from success. We see where we're trying to go, but we don't see what it actually takes to get there. We don't see the thousands of hours of training. We don't see the hundreds of thousands of steps to the top. And we don't see the time all of this takes before we actually reach the thing we are all dreaming about. If you are waiting till the last minute, procrastinating, and believe you can cram for the test, you are sabotaging your own success. If you haven't put in the time, you won't be able to perform. A brick wall can't be built with a single brick, unless you're an ant. And a dream won't be accomplished with a single step. It's all the tiny little steps that add up over time. This is the mindset that starts opening doors for you. One open door leads to another, which leads to another. They build onto each other. To think you're going to build a whole career on a single success is like thinking you're going to build a brick wall with just one brick. In September 1979, I began to see all my consistency and dedication begin to pay off. I had been working to become a better skater for long enough at that point to finally begin to see results. By the time the Nationals came around in January 1980, I found my way to the podium, placing third. This was not only the best I'd ever done, but it was also good enough to put me on the Olympic team. In February, I competed at the Olympics and took fifth. Now I was starting to be the kind of skater other skaters were watching. Too many people are looking for growth to be explosive, when the truth is that real growth happens slowly. If you think growth happens overnight, you'll get frustrated when you don't see immediate results, and you will give up. When you recognize that growth happens over time, you make the choice to show up, act like a champion, and live like a champion every day. There are no shortcuts on the path to success. There is no faking it. You've either done the work or you haven't. When you step on the ice, it's just you. Most of us are used to being managed, coached, held up by friends or family members, or reinforced by titles or positions. But when it comes time to compete, you're the only one out there. There's nothing to hide behind. How you show up to practice will be how you show up to a competition. How you choose to live your life will be how you show up on the day you're called to perform. And if you put in the work off the field or outside the office, there will be no question that you are a champion. You may not win everything all at once, but you will make slow, steady progress in the right direction. Eventually, you will get there, and it won't have been handed to you. You will have earned it. Chapter 6. Overcome Your Limitations. I cannot discover that anyone knows enough to say definitely what is and is not possible. Henry Ford. In 1984, I was invited to speak at the Paralympic Games celebration dinner in Denver, Colorado. It was just after I had come home from my Olympic gold win in Sarajevo, and I showed up with my chest held high, basking in all of my Olympic fabulousness, only to be greeted by a room full of athletes who, without saying anything, made me realize how much I still had to learn about being a champion. As the dinner unfolded, the feeling that I was amazing quickly faded. I looked around the room at a group of people who had overcome the most impossible obstacles I couldn't even imagine, to stand in the winner's circle. I was reminded within a minute of what it really means to be a champion. Paralympic athletes do things most people could never imagine. They go down mountains on one leg at 70 miles per hour. They play hockey and sled sitting on a skate without the ability to use their legs. They play basketball in wheelchairs. These athletes have pretty much any physical disability you can imagine, and yet they compete at an extremely high level beyond anything most of us would dare dream. Winning is about tapping into your own innate human potential. This is a lesson to all of us that it is not a lack of skill or talent or capability or know-how that prevents us from achieving our own personal victory. It's a lack of bravery, a lack of willingness to put all our cards on the table. If we could only get over our excuses, we would find that we have always been the champions we long to be. We've been holding back. What if you were able to achieve the kind of personal potential in your life that Paralympic athletes achieve in their lives every day? We can rise above not only expectation, but also the things that normally would hold anyone back. Winning is not normal, but it's so important. A champion says, I will not let my limitations keep me from achieving my dreams. I will make the impossible possible. This is what the athletes of the Paralympic Games are doing every day. Why is it taking so long for us to get it? The only disability. The only disability in life is a bad attitude. I repeat this over and over again to the skaters I work with, to my kids, and to anyone who will listen, really. That's how important I think it is. This approach to life can be the difference between winning and losing, between first place and last place. No matter who you are and no matter what finishing first looks like for you, any goal will always have obstacles, difficulties, and setbacks. You will be defined not by those setbacks, but by how you respond to them. You can decide ahead of time, even before you set out on your journey, that this is going to be too hard, and you will be right. Or you can learn to identify setbacks as minor problems that you need to put behind you and decide to have a good time doing whatever it is that you are doing. I mean, if you're not having fun doing something, then why are you doing it? If succeeding means it's going to be a horrible, awful, painful ordeal for you, then why would you do it? I don't believe success is gained that way. You'll meet people in life who seem to have a miserable time no matter what they're doing. They could be on vacation at the beach and they would still find something to complain about. The towels at the resort weren't big enough. The hotel staff weren't friendly enough. The weather was too hot or too cold. Then you'll meet other people who tackle life's biggest obstacles with incredible tenacity and smile and laugh their way through it. It's not a difference in circumstance. It's a difference in perspective. Attitude is everything. Of course there will be hard moments on the way. Of course there will be moments when you've had to do things you don't want to do. But you can choose either to see these moments as small blips on the radar of the overall adventure of your life, or to focus on them, blow them out of proportion, and make them the entire scope of the landscape. The best thing a champion can do is maximize the good moments and minimize the uncomfortable ones. This is the fastest, best, most fun way to the top. Who says it's impossible? I recently learned about a young man named Kyle Maynard who wanted to climb to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro. The feat itself is impressive but not impossible. It would take some training, strengthening, and preparation. Thousands of other people have climbed to the top. He had amazing role models to follow. There was only one difference. Kyle was born with no arms or legs. For Kyle, the climb to the top of Kilimanjaro would be far greater than just training and preparation. It would be a nearly impossible feat, one that had never been attempted before. The question on everyone's mind as Kyle began to push toward his goal was, will he ever be able to overcome his obvious limitations to achieve his dream? Maybe you can relate in some way to Kyle's dilemma. There's something you want to achieve. Maybe it's something hundreds or thousands of other people have done before you. But the lingering problem in the back of your mind is that you have an obvious limitation you can't ignore. Maybe you don't have the money or the reputation or the experience or the resources to do the thing you want to do. As a cancer survivor, anytime I meet people who have been diagnosed with cancer, I assure them that there will be a moment in the beginning where they feel gripped with fear. Then suddenly, without explanation, that fear will morph into an inexplicable drive to survive. I tell them that before they know it, they will find more strength, more resilience, and more fight inside of them than they ever dreamed possible. We are capable of so much more than we realize. You don't have to be diagnosed with a life-threatening illness to uncover your own inner resilience. All you need is to know what you truly desire, what you want badly enough that you're willing to do anything to get it. Then you begin to deal with the obstacles and limitations getting in your way and decide that you're finished with letting anything keep you from living the life you want to live. Nothing but solutions. In 2014, when the Nashville Predators decided to get into a new venture of managing ice skating centers, they asked me if I would be willing to partner with them in building a Learn to Skate program. I, of course, agreed. In the process of building the Scott Hamilton Skating Academy, Paula Trujillo, who was the facilitator and who handled all the details, experienced firsthand the worst of the obstacles and setbacks. Imagine trying to facilitate the schedules of dozens of different coaches and students, making sure there were no overlaps and that everyone gets what they need. It couldn't have been easy. Still, Paula would always say, "There are no problems. There are only solutions." Isn't that true? Problems are only a test for how creative we can get with our solutions. How creative can you get with the solutions to your problems? The most successful people do not necessarily have the most resources or the most talent. They're the ones who have leveraged hidden strategies perfect for their individual skill sets. Nathan Chen is the it guy in skating right now. A 17-year-old U.S. champion who has more jumps than anybody in the world. That's the it factor for this kid. His jumps. He can just keep putting most of his eggs in that basket. If he keeps doing jumps and doing them better than everyone else, that's his ace card to win. I recently met George Shin, who is also a cancer survivor. Given his background, he's the last person you would predict to finish first. But the man has amazing tenacity. He was born in North Carolina to a poor family and graduated last in his class of 293 students from the A.L. Brown High School. He worked in a textile mill and as a school janitor to pay his way through Evans Business College. Then, get this, upon graduating from Evans, he bought the school. purchased it along with several other small colleges, which he consolidated under the name Rutledge Education Systems. Eventually, he ended up selling the school and buying a basketball team with the proceeds. If you recognize its name, it's probably because he later became the owner of the Charlotte Hornets. Then, in 1973, he founded the George Shinn Foundation, whose mission and purpose is to provide scholarships for the under-resourced. Look around. Pay attention to the stories of people who are finishing first. Then realize that all of your excuses are just that, excuses. Ask what has worked for others and how you can make it work for you, too. Ask yourself how you can leverage your unique skills and strengths to accomplish the unthinkable. How can you go from the bottom of your class to purchasing the school? Kenny Trout is the founder of XL Communications and a billionaire who started with nothing. His dad was a bartender, and he paid his way through college by selling life insurance. He was willing to get over his ego to do whatever was necessary to get from point A to point B. Howard Schultz, the chief executive officer for Starbucks, grew up in a housing complex for the poor and started his business career selling copiers for Xerox. Even at Xerox, Schultz quickly became one of the top sellers and was promoted to full sales representative. He had the charisma and the charm to win people over and get them to buy anything, even a copy machine. Oprah Winfrey was born into poverty to an unmarried teenage mother and raised for her first 6 years by her maternal grandmother, who is said to be so poor that Oprah sometimes wore potato sacks as dresses. At 13, after years of suffering abuse, Oprah ran away from home. In the face of persecution and bullying at school, Oprah was unwilling to give up. She eventually landed a job in radio and later became the first African-American television correspondent in Nashville, Tennessee. Then, in 1993, she was recruited to work for an AM radio talk show that would eventually become known as The Oprah Winfrey Show. Ralph Lauren started as a clerk at Brooks Brothers, only dreaming of men's ties. What a great reminder that it always starts with a dream. If you feel like you're called to something, answer it. A dream you don't answer becomes a nightmare. People look at success stories of those who came from nothing and become something great and think about how they must have been really special. Why can't this be you? Slayer dragons. Whatever you think is holding you back is not holding you back. You can use it to your advantage. Abuse, bullying, poverty, lack of education, bad grades, anything. It can't be a bigger obstacle than what Oprah was facing, or Schultz, or Kenny Trout. When you start to pay attention, you find story after story of people who had to wait their turn. They simply stayed in the game long enough to win. The tennis player Jimmy Connors was famous for saying, "All I need is one break. Once I get one service break, I win." That was his mentality. What if this was your mentality? The only other choice you really have is to quit. How often has quitting worked as a strategy? Of course, you are going to encounter obstacles, forks in the road, moments when you have to make a decision whether to move right or left. Critics and failure and all kinds of weights will try to pull you down and hold you back. You will develop the strength you need to slay these dragons. The thing with fire is that you can either be consumed by it or be the rocket fueled by it. The same water that softens a potato hardens an egg. Same substance, different results. And it all has to do with who you decide to be. There's not a person out there who doesn't have a mountain of pain he or she is dealing with. There's not a person who doesn't have critics. It's how you deal with it. Are you going to let it hold you back? Or are you going to use it to propel you toward your great purpose in this life? What is holding you back? Are you late to your commitments? Are you easily distracted? Do you need to work on communication skills? Do you make impulsive decisions? Even something as simple as the way you present yourself to people can have a huge impact on your ability to finish first. Rather than overlook your weaknesses, become someone who is worthy of winning by overcoming them. When it came to climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, Kyle Maynard's attitude was, Every excuse we make keeps us from getting what we want most out of life. How many people have this attitude about overcoming challenges? It was this attitude that drove all of Kyle's training and sent him to Tanzania, where he would attempt something that, for most people, would have seemed impossible, maybe even crazy. Possibly the greatest day of your adult life is when you walk into a living space that you are paying for, not your parents, not anyone else. You. There's no feeling like it. Even if life will give you handouts, you'll never be satisfied with getting things for which you didn't have to work to have them. You are craving a challenge, aren't you? I believe we are all wired for struggle. And until you make the decision to fight for what really matters to you, you're going to continue wondering if you're missing something. You were made to answer the bell. If you're totally satisfied with your life, if you don't feel you need to make any changes, then do me a favor and hand this book off to someone who can really benefit from it. But if you look at where you are and it's not exactly where you want to be, then ask yourself what it would be like for you to show up in mind, body, and spirit to what you are wanting to do. All you have to do is look around. Examples of people who show up every day are everywhere. Every athlete you admire, every business person you admire, every leader you admire shows up in ways you probably don't even know. Because it's not dramatic. There's not a bunch of fanfare. Nobody gives you an award or a trophy for doing the work. It's just commitment and repetition. A dedication of showing up and doing the same things day after day. Kyle Maynard didn't climb Kilimanjaro by deciding he was at the summit. It was one day at a time, one step at a time. It was with an iron will that Kyle climbed, or more like bear crawled, step after step up the 19,000-foot mountain. Consistency and repetition. He kept moving, unwilling to let anything throw him off course. In January 2012, he completed his mission to climb the epic peak of Mount Kilimanjaro. Not only that, but he also carried with him the ashes of a fallen soldier who wanted to be sprinkled at the top. In that emotional moment at the top of the mountain, Kyle showed himself what is possible with simple commitment and repetition. He showed all of us. This is what happens when one person decides he has what it takes. Everyone leans in to share in the victory with him. Are you ready to be done underachieving? Then it's time to choose something different. It's time to start showing up. It's time to be done waiting for the life you want to be handed and to start fighting for it. It's time to start believing that your limitations are just excuses. You are capable. I know you are. It's time to start acting like it. Chapter 7. Outwork Everyone. The key is not the will to win. Everybody has that. It's the will to prepare to win that is important. Bobby Knight. One of my greatest competitors in skating also happened to be one of the most naturally talented skaters the world has ever known. He had more natural ability than just about anyone else in the sport. He was literally built to skate. But he had one thing working against him. He loved smoking pot. The morning I learned that was one of the greatest mornings of my life. I knew that I could never out-talent this guy, but because of his failure to address his weakness, I could outwork him. He didn't have the work ethic to make an easy choice. If you have the hunger to win, this isn't even a question. Your mind is made up. I have known dozens of athletes in my career who had more talent and natural ability than I did. How was I able to beat them? I can only think that I wanted it more than they did. I learned how to outlast them when it came to commitment and dedication. People often talk about the sacrifice it takes to win. I don't necessarily like to think of it like that because in my mind, this is a no-brainer. Once your mind is made up that you want to finish first, the choices you have to make to get there are made for you. You stop making all the decisions that are sabotaging you. Smoking pot isn't the only decision that will sabotage you. There are 1,000 ways to sabotage your ability to be successful. And once you have made your mind up that you want to do it, you will. Anything that will keep you from your own ability to be successful is sabotage. Procrastinating, drinking too much, not eating healthfully.